I'd have gone with Gartner, he was more industrial biochemistry and things like that. It was kind of amusing. I asked him, what kind of a job can you get after you get your PhD degree? And he handed me a piece of paper with a letter from the industry. And they said they'd pay $3,600 for a cry. I said, that's it. Well, in those days, that was, the professor, I think Workman was only getting $4,000 or so, or $4,500. They were always published in the Des Moines paper in those days, the salaries. And of course, it was during the Depression, and the dollar was worth something, that's for sure. Anyway, by going there, we got working on metabolism of bacteria and things like that, and we were reading Warburg's stuff in Germany, and we were reading Wieland and Lehmann and all of this, because these guys were working on yeast metabolism and whatnot.
I wanted to ask you, when you applied to Iowa State, was it specific for Workman or?
No, I just applied.
Okay. Then how did you make the association with Workman?
Well, he picked me.
Okay.
I think what really got me this was that he wanted guys that had chemistry, you see. And a lot of the people that were applying were biology majors and things like that. And here was a guy who had a major in chemistry and mathematics and so on. So I had the qualifications that he wanted. And I think that's why I got the fellowship. I never really talked to him about it, but that's almost logical that that's the way that happened.
Had you done any research at McAllister, or was it just laboratory?
No, I did a little. It didn't amount to much. We had, in chemistry, they had a lab, well, a research sort of lab, and I was, this fella, Dean Jones, wanted me to take weeds and so on, and what do they call it? Anyway, in the absence of air, heat them up and it'd make gases, and I was supposed to generate gas and find out what the gases were and so on. Mostly I melted his Pyrex flask and so on. But not any real research. We had organic labs and so on where we synthesized stuff, and but it was more or less cookbook affair. You didn't really get into what's really going on very much. I think the course that this was at Iowa State, I took qualitative organic chemistry there. And there they gave you unknowns and so on. That's the first real business. Really, you got down to brass tacks about how do you identify a compound, what's the melting points, and how do you separate. You know, they gave you a mixture, and you really had to get to work and think pretty hard about how to identify those. And then that's when I found out I didn't know much chemistry. I took this course from Henry Gelman, and Henry Gelman is a world-renowned chemist. And gee, we had a book named Calm that was the little thing that told you how to identify compounds and separate them and so on. And at the end of each chapter, there was a set of questions. So the first time I studied those questions like mad. There wasn't a one of them on that. And I got a D or a D minus or something. So the next time I didn't study Calm, I studied what he gave us. Geez, he asked all the questions. I was in tough shape. And And this was kind of a rough time too, because my wife was pregnant, and she was in Minnesota, and here I am down here having a hell of a time with this chemistry course. So I studied like mad for the final exam, and he always gave you, or he did this time, and he was known for this, he gave you a question that you'd go 1, 2, 3, it was like a puzzle, and you had to, if you didn't get the first part, you couldn't get the second part, and the third part, and the fourth part. Well, I sat there studying that question, and finally I got it figured out. But it was getting awful close to the end of the time. So I was writing like mad, and they called for the papers. And I said, no way, I'm not giving you this paper. I know the answer to this question, I'm flunking. You're not going to get my blue books until I get this down. Well, the guy finally let me finish it. Well, to my disappointment, when I got the grade, I didn't have a very good grade. It turned out that they'd got the blue books mixed up, and there was one blue book missing, you see. And so I finally got that straightened out and passed the course all right. But Gilman was awful good to me. When we were, see, in those days you had to synthesize all the compounds. If you wanted carbon-13 in there, you had to make it yourself. And I'd go over and see him and talk to him, and he'd tell me what he thought ought to be done. And he even sent a couple of kids over there from chemistry to work on a couple of these things. So he was very good to me, and very upset when I left. See, I was there for 12 years all told as a graduate student, and then a year at Wisconsin and postdoc, and then I came back again and was there for 7 more years. So I was pretty well known as one of the younger guys around that place. We had a very good time in research there. The workmen had, I think 7 or 8 graduate students. He was pretty well supported as far as those times went, because they had the Ag Experiment Station and they had the Industrial Science Foundation there, and he got money from them. We didn't spend much money in those days, but he had that kind of support for fellowships and so on. And he gave us assignments. Like me, he just said, I want you to work on the propionic acid bacteria. And that's about as far all he said. And he said, I want you to go read every article that's ever been written about the propionic acid bacteria. Well, practically all of them were in German, and I never had any German. And, geez, I'd take this dictionary out and look up the words, line them up, and then try to figure out what the sentence was. It took me a long time to figure out if it's got GE in front, don't look for GE. Anyway, there was a Dutchman named Van Neel, who was a very eminent microbiologist. He's the guy that came to the United States, and Van Neel used to have a summer school, and Arthur Kornberg and Paul Berg and a lot of those guys went out to take this summer course. He was a very good teacher. Anyway, he had worked on the propionic acid bacteria, so I had his thesis, which was written in English, fortunately, to work from. And so I started working on them. The controversy was that succinic acid was a product of this that he found. And he said that, and at that time they were making their own media. They took yeast and boiled it up and filtered it, and yeast extract was made that way. And he said that the succinic acid was coming from aspartic acid in the media, that it wasn't coming from the glucose. Well, I set up these fermentations, and in those days we did what they call carbon balances. You fermented the sugar and you found out how much glucose was fermented, and you multiplied the moles by 6 and so on. So now you've got to account for all the carbon in the products, anaerobic fermentation. And well, when I did it, I found that succinic acid, I needed the succinic acid to account for all the carbon that was fermented. And I remember Cliver came, and Cliver was the mentor of Van Neel. He came and gave us summer school lectures there. Now, Workman was brought this guy. So Workman was, you know, in some ways was pretty damn good. Anyway, when Cliver came down there, I was down in the lab in the basement. And Workman said something that I had shown that Van Neel was wrong. And boy, Cliver just went straight up in the air. Van Neel is never wrong. And so on. Well, I finally convinced him, because I cut the amount of yeast extract. By that time, you bought the yeast extract. I cut the amount of yeast extract down to as small as I could get it, and then I got more succinic acid than there was yeast extract added. And I showed him this, and I said, well, he's definitely wrong. That's all there is to it. So that worked out fine. And then, as you probably read in, yes?
Did Workman, you said he just didn't give you any direction initially. Did he have much daily contact with you, or were you pretty much on your own?
Well, he was kind of a funny guy. We had a weekly conference with him. And I don't remember whether it was exactly this way when I was a student, but I was there for quite a while afterwards, and he was just possessed by the fact that he thought everybody was against him. He thought the dean wasn't supporting him, and so on. So when I'd go up to talk to him, all I would hear was all his problems. We never talked research. Or I'd start, but that's so far as it got. He didn't... Well, he was trained as an immunologist and shifted into this field. He never really directed us very much. He was always proud of what his students did, and he was and made you feel good that way, and so on. If he had a visitor and so on, he would talk about what was done and so on. But and he had us out to his home. He had a basement living kind of a quarters down there, and we'd have seminars down there and talk about our research and so on. But day by day, very little. The fact of the matter is that in a way, I was almost running the lab in the end. I'd been there quite a while. And so when these, we'd all talk about our research, and I'd figure out, well, they ought to do this. So I'd tell him, you go up and tell Workman you want to do this. And he'll tell you, oh, I don't think so, but don't argue with him. Just tell him. And I said, in about a week, he'll come and tell you should do this. So that's the way we would way we'd get things done, you see. But as far as getting us equipment and stuff like that. He was good at that. And of course the big change, well, when I found, first of all, I found this carbon dioxide utilization by these bacteria, which is more or less an accident, because when you put them on glycerol and ferment, and you have calcium carbonate in there, and you determine how much calcium carbonate you put in to neutralize the acids, and then at the end you determine how much is left and so on, and then how much CO2 you collected. I collected less than what calcium carbonate I put in. And of course, the dogma was that that's impossible for heterotrophs, bacteria that have to have organic compounds, to utilize CO2. And I was fully convinced of that too. But I had set up five of them, five different species, and all of them were negative. And I just figured, well, I must have weighed the calcium carbonate out wrong or something. But there was a discrepancy, because when you did the carbon balance wasn't too bad. Of course, if you use a little CO2, that's only one carbon, so it doesn't influence the carbon balance much. Carbon balance came out a little high, but, you know, 105% or something, why, okay, you don't pay too much attention to it. But we used to calculate, the other thing you calculated was oxidation-reduction balances. If it's an anaerobic fermentation, for every oxidation, there's got to be a reduced product. Well, this these damn fermentations, the oxidation-reduction balance was way off. And I couldn't figure out what's going on here. I had a lot more oxidized products. A lot more oxidized products than I should have had, I thought. So I just was bugging everybody about this. And as I wrote in this thing, when I was writing my thesis, I wrote all the other stuff, but then I got to this and I thought, gee, I wish I could write something about this. A lot of work when you do all those analyses, you see. And then all of a sudden it hit me, my God, if that CO2 is reduced, that's the reduced product, and now you got now your calculation, and they came out right. So I knew immediately that they were using CO2. So I went over to see Wertmann about it, and by that time we had the whole damn thesis typed, and I was using completely wrong way of getting succinic acid and stuff like that. I knew everything was wrong in that thesis, but he didn't want to change it because he said, what the heck? So he had to retype the whole thing and everything else, so we just left it out, you see. But I'm not sure he believed it. There's a fellow, Halverson was the chairman of the department at the University of Minnesota in microbiology, and they had a fellow named Ordahl, who's a good biochemist or microbiologist. He, when I gave this little talk at the local meeting, not the national, but the north central branch of microbiology, Halverson said, I don't believe a word of it. And Workman said, I don't either. Now that's inconceivable. Here's a guy with his name on the thing and so on, and he said, I don't either. Well,
what kind of a general reaction did you get to that at that when you gave?
Oh, there was mostly disbelief. There's no doubt about that. And then I gave it at another time in St. Louis. It was known that CO2 could be reduced to formate by formic dehydrogenase, and it also was known that the methane bacteria, and this was all happening about the same time, could reduce CO2 to methane. But this was different because this CO2 was going into a carbon-carbon linkage, you see, which is more like assimilation that occurs in photosynthesis and so on. So this was a different thing. And I remember Waksman is his name. Waksman discovered penicillin and so on. Well, antibiotics, not penicillin, because that was done in England. Waksman got up and said, I don't see is this so important. We all know CO2 can be reduced to formate and so on. And I got pretty peeved about it, and I said, well, that's not so important. The question is, how do you make compounds out of CO2? And well, now you're making a carbon-to-carbon bond, and this is more like what occurs in photosynthesis and so on. And this is quite a different situation. And he said, yeah, I guess that's true, when we got through. Well, of course, I went to an international congress in New York at that, in 39, I think it was, in microbiology. There were, at that time, carbon 11, that's the short-lived isotope, it's only 22 and a half minutes half-life, was available. They had a cyclotron out there. And I met Martin Kamen and Rubin and these guys, and Barker. And of course, our interest was, where is that CO2? Is it in the succinic acid the way I postulated? And if it was, it should be just in the carboxyl positions and so on, or isn't it? And so I talked to those guys, and they said, well, if you want to come out, we'll do an experiment, but you realize that the whole damn thing has to be done in not more than 5 hours. You've got to ferment it, you've got to get your succinic acid out, and you've got to give it to us. So I went back. You see, we were usually doing fermentation for 5 or 6 days. So I went back and I grew up the bacteria, and then I spun them down so that you had the bacteria. And then I put the glycerol in and so on. And of course, they would ferment fast because you got a whole pack of them there. And then I spun that out. And then I took this solution up in plaster of Paris, which dried this solution. And then I put it on a funnel and I poured ether through it. Under acid conditions, and the succinic acid and, of course, the volatile acids and so on came through. And then I added the silver nitrate to it, and the silver salt of succinate's insoluble, and I got that out. Or I could add barium and alcohol and get the barium succinate. And I got that stuff, so I could do it in about 3 hours or so. And I don't know, we need to stop. I don't know whether this is what you want me to talk about.
It's fine. It's fine. No, we still have a little more time.
Oh. Anyway, when I went up to see Workman, I told him about this. And this is, I think it's all in some of those things, too. I told him about it, and he said, no, you can't go. I wasn't asking him for money even to go. I was going on my own expense and everything else. And, of course, I was crushed because I thought, geez, here we got this, and now all we have to do is to go out there and we'll know where this is. And then I found out about Al Neer at the University of Minnesota, and he was doing this carbon-13 stuff. And it just happened that my brother Earl, who was in physiology, University of Minnesota, knew about Al Neer, and I was telling him about this. We always used to go home to we got a summer place out there on Lake Washington, and he told me about this. So I went up to see Al, and he said, sure. And I told him what I wanted to do, and he was really pleased because a lot of guys were doing stuff there. But they'd feed CO2 to a rat, and then they'd take the organs and burn it. And, you know, they didn't have any specific question They were, and he could see I had a question that I was really wanted to ask. So Workman didn't object to this at all. And I never was quite clear, we never talked about it really, whether the only reason I can think of is that he didn't want the Barker and those guys to get a lead on this subject, because they would have been able to study it and we wouldn't have been able to. Whereas Neer, he had no fear of a physicist cutting in. Maybe that's what it was, probably was, but he never told me. Anyway, we struck up a nice relationship with Al Neer. He's a very nice guy, and he helped us a lot. And it turned out that the C-13 carbon dioxide was where we predicted it would be, and so on.